Go ahead.
Jeremiah 51. Thus saith Yahweh, behold, I will raise up against Babylon and against them that dwell in the midst of them that rise up against me a destroying wind, and will send unto Babylon fanners that shall fan her and shall empty her land. For in the day of trouble they shall be against her round about. Against him that bendeth, let the archer bend his bow, and against him that lifteth himself up in his brigandine, and spare ye not her young men, destroy ye utterly all her host. Thus the slain shall fall in the land of the Chaldeans, and they that are thrust through in her streets. For Israel hath not been forsaken, nor Judah of his God, of Yahweh of hosts, though their land was filled with sin against the Holy One of Israel. Flee out of the midst of Babylon, and deliver every man his soul. Be not cut off in her iniquity, for this is the time of the Lord's vengeance, of Yahweh's vengeance. He will render unto her a recompense. Babylon hath been a golden cup in Yahweh's hand that made all the earth drunken. The nations have drunken of her wine, therefore the nations are mad. Babylon is suddenly fallen and destroyed. Howl for her, take balm for her pain, if so be she may be healed. We would have healed Babylon, but she is not healed. Forsake her, and let us go every one into his own country, for her judgment reacheth unto heaven, and is lifted up even to the skies. Yahweh hath brought forth our righteousness. Come, and let us declare in Zion, the work of Yahweh our God. Make bright the arrows, gather the shields. Yahweh hath raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes, for his device is against Babylon to destroy it, because it is the vengeance of Yahweh, the vengeance of his temple. Set up the standard upon the walls of Babylon. Make the watch strong. Set up the watchmen. Prepare the ambushes, for Yahweh hath both devised and done that which he spake against the inhabitants of Babylon.
Yeah, you know, where it says the nations are mad, that word is halal, and it means shining. And I never saw this use of it before, to be honest, but I mean, it's in Brown Driver Briggs. It says that it could be boastful. I guess shining in public, right? Or shining in sort of society. Boastful, to boast, to glory, or to make a fool of, or make into a fool, to act madly like a madman. I'd like to study that more, but I mean, it kind of makes sense. Like, to make a spectacle of yourself is to be foolish. Yeah, you know what I mean? But it's kind of a weird use of the word I never saw before or never noticed.
Well, so the primary meaning is shining.
Yeah, halal. It's the word that we get halogen from in English. And halo, halal. And it means to shine. That's where halo comes from.
Well, does that kind of intertwine with the cup being gilded?
Yeah, I see what you mean there, and I guess that could be a that's a golden cup. It's Zahab, which means to shimmer or shine. So yeah, that could be a word play there.
I just thought it was similar enough, maybe in the same understanding kind of a thing.
Yeah, because Zahab isn't, I mean, it is gold, but it also means brilliance or splendor or to shimmer.
Right, it just seems like Babylon sells itself off of image and that same kind of mentality.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at it, right? Look at it today and look at it then. If you ever read Herodotus' description of Babylon, how marvelous it was, how it had all these wonders, these hanging gardens, these magnificent walls, and all of the imagery that's portrayed.
Right.
I mean the chapters in Jeremiah are out of order, so it's difficult to really make a good commentary until they're put in the correct order, but I really do think that this prophecy, it is a has a double meaning, that parts of it or all of it are applicable today, except for the Medes, of course, the reference to the Medes, because that's a race that is no longer identifiable in society today. But this says the spirit of the kings of the Medes too, so that can be taken allegorically. The Persians and Medes had of course conquered Babylon and taken the city without destroying it. So this says that Babylon is going to be destroyed, but they took the city at that time without destroying it. And there's actually prophecy in Isaiah that the gates would be open to Cyrus, which kind of infers that the city wouldn't be destroyed. But they did, that there was a lot of battle in the fields of the greater area of Babylonia. Belshazzar was locked up in a city, and he was the son of the king, and he had a co-regency with him, and he was left to the city where the king Nabonidus was actually out commanding the armies and fighting against the Persians, and they lost. But I don't know if there's a good record of all the battles that were fought against the Persians by Nabonidus, or of all of the destruction of the surrounding area, except that Babylon itself was not destroyed at this time. Which also lends me to believe that this is really has a double meaning. Even when you read verse 11, the vengeance of his temple, that could be vengeance against Mystery Babylon for what they've done to the body of Christ, right? Which it's is like his temple.
Encampment of the saints type scenario.
I'm sorry?
It's like the encampment of the saints today, like the vengeance of Yahweh when the flames come down from heaven.
Mm-hmm.
His temple is sort of like the encampment of the saints in the Revelation. So that's a like parallel to today. And when you've got Babylon making the nations drunk, well, today we've got that world religion, the religion of confusion.
Oh, yeah. Today, there's no doubt that all the nations are drunk on this Mystery Babylon. I mean, they're all deceived. Look at the shit they do. I mean, with the COVID scare and all that, and they all walk lockstep. What with world communism and global warming and all these other agendas that our enemies have, it's pretty clear the nations are drunk. They do all these things that are contrary to their own interests, in the interest of all these liberal agendas, these Jewish Marxist agendas, they really are.
Microphone activated.
That word.
What could make all the people across the West wear these COVID masks and get these vaccines if the nations weren't drunk? Like, they're acting like they're drunk.
Reminded me when you said halal. Well, in Serbian, it's haval, H-V-A-L. That means to boast.
Okay, that's interesting.
Polish has a version of it too, in Slovenian.
That is interesting.
Well, with all this COVID stuff and the global warming stuff, all of it is sort of surrounding the camp of the saints, or surrounding, you know, Jerusalem.
And yeah, right. I can see that. People are besieged by all the bullshit.
Needed. Well, also the reaction is very drunkardly. The reaction is just like you would do if you were drunk. Your mind is not in the right place.
All right. O thou that dwellest upon many waters, abundant in treasures, thine end is come, and the measure of thy covetousness. Well, Yahweh of hosts hath sworn by himself, saying, surely I will fill thee with men as with caterpillars, and they shall lift up a shout against thee. He hath made the earth by his power. He hath established the world by his wisdom, and hath stretched out the heaven by his understanding. When he uttereth his voice, there is a multitude of waters in the heavens, and he causeth the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He maketh lightnings with rain, and bringeth forth the wind out of his treasures. Every man is brutish by his knowledge. Every founder is confounded by the graven image, for his molten image is falsehood, and there is no breath in them. They are vanity, the work of errors. In the end of their visitation they shall perish. The portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the former of all things, and Israel is the rod of his inheritance. Yahweh of hosts is his name. Thou art my battle axe and weapons of war. For with thee will I break in pieces the nations, and with thee will I destroy kingdoms. And with thee I will break in pieces the horse and his rider, and with thee will I break in pieces the chariot and his rider. With thee also will I break in pieces man and woman, and with thee will I break in pieces old and young, and with thee will I break in pieces the young man and the maid. I will also break in pieces with thee the shepherd and his flock, and with thee will I break in pieces the husbandman and his yoke of oxen, and with thee will I break in pieces captains and rulers. And I will render unto Babylon and to the inhabitants of Chaldea all their evil that they have done in Zion in your sight, saith Yahweh. Behold, I am against thee, O destroying mountain, saith Yahweh, which destroyest all the earth, and I will stretch out mine hand upon thee, and roll thee down from the rocks, and will make thee a burnt mountain. And they shall not take thee of, and they shall not take of thee a stone for a corner, nor a stone for foundations, but thou shalt be desolate forever, saith Yahweh. Set ye up a standard in the land, blow the trumpet among the nations, prepare the nations against her. Call together against her the kingdoms of Ararat, Mini, and Ashkenaz. Appoint a captain against her. Cause the horses to come up as the rough caterpillars. Prepare against her the nations with the kings of the Medes, the kings thereof, and the rulers thereof, and all the land of his dominion. And the land shall tremble and sorrow, for every purpose of Yahweh shall be performed against Babylon, to make the land of Babylon a desolation without inhabitant. All right, you're muted, Bill.
Sorry. I ran over and grabbed my Dead Sea Scrolls Bible off the shelf to check out verse 20. But which CI people just love the quote, right? Thou art my battle axe and weapons of war. And of course, I wouldn't doubt that even without this passage, because many other scriptures imply that. But here, the Septuagint says, thou scatterest for me the weapons of war, in Greek and English, Brenton's English. And I will scatter nations by thee and will destroy kings by means of thee. Thou scatterest for me the weapons of war. I grabbed the Dead Sea Scrolls, but this verse didn't survive in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It only goes up to the first few verses of chapter 50 in Jeremiah. So, I mean, I can't. There's no referee for the differences between the Septuagint and the King James Version here.
I guess it's still a diminishing.
Yeah, I mean, it's still. With thee, I will scatter nations and destroy kings. I mean, it's still the same meaning, but it's just kind of weird that beginning where it says, thou scatterest for me the weapons of war. Because the Hebrew, you are for a utensil of war. You are for a utensil of war is what the first few words say, and that's basically the first clause, because then there's the and. Scatter nations with you and spoil kingdoms with you. is how I would read the Hebrew in a very rudimentary way, without trying to really make my own translation. So, I mean, the King James is fair in verse 20.
Well, so but the Septuagint reading agrees with like verses from Ezekiel where it says like he'll break their bows out of their hands and things like that. So it could be either way because the Septuagint reading is sort of, and then the next verse
it does kind of agree better with those passages.
I think it's in Ezekiel anyways. And then the next verse in 21, it says, I will break the horse and these riders. So that sort of agrees with the Septuagint as well.
Now, the Douay-Rheims kind of seems to agree with the Septuagint more, but it says, thou dashest together for me the weapons of war. But the word dioscorpizo in Greek clearly means to scatter, not to dash together. So that's kind of weird. I can't read the Latin.
Well, that goes back to that Hebrew word of mingling, which was still a negative. It's still a diminishing, isn't it?
All right, thou art my battle axe and weapons of war, and this is thou scatterest for me the weapons of war. I mean, the meaning isn't really that different, right? But that one phrase is pretty different. The meaning of the overall passage is similar.
Right. It doesn't take away from what is repeated again and again with the right.
Yeah, you know, I might have a pet peeve with this passage because when I was in prison, somebody sent me a newsletter from the CI pastors in New Jersey, of all places, West Jersey. And they were promoting the Septuagint in the newsletter. But at the top of the newsletter, they had the King James reading of Jeremiah 51:20. I wrote them a nice letter and said, well, you're promoting the Septuagint. You got the King James reading here, and the Septuagint reading is kind of different. And I never got an answer from them. I guess they just thought I was a smart ass, right?
Was this one of the verses used in the Germanic origins paper as far as distinguishing them with the rock cut out of the mountains?
I mean, I'm not saying I didn't quote it, but I just threw 5120 in my search engine and didn't find it. Oh, it is in... it's mentioned, it's alluded to in Herodotus, Scythians, Persians, and Prophecy. It's in there.
I don't mean to take us off. I just remember to see the battle axe thing with the Germanic.
Yeah, the battle axe thing is in Herodotus, Scythians, Persians, and Prophecy, which is fine.
I don't mean to take us off track, just in case that was relevant. But obviously with the is repeated many times or every verse.
A lot of people are going to be broken into pieces.
Well, from what I understand in history, I mean, I only have Herodotus to really roll with, right? And what's in Daniel. Herodotus and Daniel are about all you have. And for that period of time, the Persian period,
absolutely.
There are only hints and glimmers in other Greek literature.
But
the people of Babylon were never broken in pieces when Cyrus the Persian conquered Babylon.
But Joe, through most of these verses, there aren't many distinguishments, are there? So I think that's... all the more reason to get the heck out of Babylon while you can, right?
Yep. Ideologically, as well as, you know, like
in every way.
From the other races, yeah. Like, don't invite other races into your company, close company, personal company, etc.
Well, Adventure so far is, yeah, it's talking about us involved in Babylon too, not just the non-us being the beast, or excuse me, Babylon. May I ask really quick? I just had a quick thought. I don't mean to make anything more out of it than it is, but to cause the horses to come up as the rough caterpillars, is that just, is that reminiscent of the caterpillars? What is it? The insects that are mentioned that, we get back.
You're thinking of Joel?
That they, yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yes.
Well, that word for caterpillar, that's a bad translation because it's a young locust.
Oh, wow.
You know how locusts would cover a field, and I think it's just drawing a picture of the great number of them.
Yeah, good call.
And that's sort of reminiscent of today with the, like, the dark cloud coming upon the land.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, here we have mentions of Ararat, Mini, and Ashkenaz.
I don't like Ashkenaz.
Well, you know what? The word Ashkenazi Jew is very much misunderstood.
That's how they interpret the Germans.
Yes.
Oh.
I actually had to read, I don't know what the hell it was I read, but it was something from the 1800s that was a translation of a German book in the 1800s that I discovered that Ashkenaz was the Jewish name for Germany. And they call themselves Ashkenazi Jews because they're German Jews. Jews from Germany.
Yeah, the Yids interjected that by their own.
Yes, it has nothing to do with the Ashkenaz from the children of Japheth. None. Nothing. Which I was misled. While I was in prison, I didn't have that information, right?
Well, I mean, identity theft goes that far. I mean, they try to cover every angle. That's another one that they misinterpreted and they hold to be true.
So, I mean, there is no other mention of Ashkenaz, I don't think. And the King James Bible sucks in a lot of ways, man, because this is actually spelled differently. So I have to go to the other spelling in Genesis chapter 10. Children of Japheth are listed first. Okay. Ashkenaz only appears once in the Genesis chapter 10 spelling, and a C is it's A S H C H instead of A S H K in First Chronicles chapter 1, which is a repeat of Genesis chapter 10, and here in Jeremiah 51:27. It's spelled different than it is in Genesis chapter 10. But Ashkenaz is only mentioned those three times. And we can only guess at who they might be in history, because I would bet that the Greeks really couldn't tell them apart from the Medes in that same area, right? Or the Assyrians in that same area. But from this, we can understand that Ashkenaz is somewhere in or just beyond the borders of northern Mesopotamia, because Ashkenaz is mentioned along with Ararat and Mini. And in Hebrew, Ararat really only means mountain land. It's from Ar, for mountain, and Eretz, for earth. Ararat just means mountain land. And Mini only means a part or a division. And Mini is not a tribe, and Ararat isn't a tribe. that these are only descriptions of the land in or to the north of in northern Mesopotamia or to the north of northern Mesopotamia, and what we would see as Armenia today, Armenia or parts of Turkey included, right? That the modern Turkey. Armenia just means Armini, and a mini is a part or a portion, and Ar means mountains. Armenia just means mountain portion, the mountain land. That's all it means. And Ararat just means high earth or high land. That's all it means.
Well, so without the commas, could this be possibly interpreted as a tribe in a region described in different ways?
Microphone activated.
Yes, it could be. Maybe it was Ashkenaz. It was inhabiting Armenia.
But could it also mean just their status on Earth?
Yeah, good call. I mean, possibly.
I mean, their status now, right, in Babylon is high, right?
Now Strong actually interprets Ararat in a different way, but I don't agree with it. The curse reversed. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that interpretation of the name.
Yeah, how would a curse reverse it unless it was the other way around? I mean, we're talking about Babylon and destruction and whatnot. I would expect it to be the other way around in this context, unless I'm just missing something, obviously.
I think it's a religious interpretation based on the fact that that's where the ark was said to have rested. Upon the mountains of Ararat. But I see Ararat as being from the words Ar for mountain and Eretz for earth. And that's the way I'm going to continue to interpret it.
Was this after they got the ark back from Jeremiah here? Oh, excuse me. I take that back. I'm sorry. Making myself a little too ignorant here. It's been a while since I read that section of the Old Testament.
Well, there's nothing about what Jeremiah did with the Ark in the Old Testament. It's only a speculation. I believe in 2 Maccabees, 2 Maccabees. Find it now.
Okay.
Second Maccabees chapter 2. Now this Second Maccabees, right, is from somebody named Jason of Cyrene. And he was probably an Israelite dwelling in Cyrene, which is Kyrene, I would say, pronounce it. It was a Greek settlement on the north coast of Africa, just west of Egypt. And it was there from like the 7th century BC, right? And Jason of Cyrene actually did the same thing Josephus did. He took the histories of Nicholas of Damascus, and 2 Maccabees is a portion of his abridged version of some of that history, and it just so happens to match about the same period that 1 Maccabees does. And I really believe in my heart, but I can't prove it, that the Jews actually chopped the books of the Maccabees to only include a certain period. Because it's ridiculous that they both end around the same time that John Hyrcanus had ascended to the high priesthood. And that right after that is the time that Josephus records that they started converting the Edomites to Judaism. So anyway, Also, this is 2 Maccabees chapter 2. It's found in the records that Jeremy the prophet commanded them that they were carried away to take of the fire as it had been signified, and how that prophet, having given them the law, charged them not to forget the commandments of the Lord, and that they should not err in their minds. It is also contained, I'm skipping a little, it is also contained in the same writing that the prophet, being warned of God, commanded the tabernacle and the ark to go with him as he went forth into the mountain where Moses climbed up and saw the heritage of God. And when Jeremy came thither, he found an hollow cave wherein he laid the tabernacle and the ark and the altar of incense and stopped the door. So they're basically saying that the Ark of the Covenant is buried on the same mountain that Moses died on in 2 Maccabees. But I think that's probably, wow, it's probably a fable. Jason of Cyrene lived, I mean, sometime in the early first century is most likely that he lived, maybe the middle of the first century BC, before Christ. maybe 400 years after Jeremiah, about. So I think that story is, without witnesses, I wouldn't give it any credit.
I'll continue reading then. The mighty men of Babylon have forborne to fight. They have remained in their holds. Their might have failed. They became as women. They have burned her dwelling places. Her bars are broken. One post shall run to meet another, and one messenger to meet another, to show the king of Babylon that his city is taken at one end, and that the passages are stopped, and the reeds they have burned with fire. And the men of war are affrighted. For thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the God of Israel, the daughter of Babylon is like a threshing floor. It is time to thresh her yet a little while, and the time of her harvest shall come. Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babylon, hath devoured me. He hath crushed me. He hath made me an empty vessel. He hath swallowed up like a dragon. He hath filled his belly with my delicates. He hath cast me out. The violence done to me and to my flesh be upon Babylon. Shall the inhabitant of Zion and my blood upon the inhabitants of Chaldea, shall Jerusalem say. Therefore, thus saith Yahweh, behold, I will plead thy cause and take vengeance for thee, and I will dry up her sea and make her springs dry. And Babylon shall become heaps and a dwelling place for dragons and an astonishment and an hissing without an inhabitant. They shall roar together like lions, they shall yell as lions' whelps. In their heat I will make their feast, and I will make them drunken, that they may rejoice and sleep a perpetual sleep, and not wake, saith Yahweh. I will bring them down like lambs to the slaughter, like rams with he-goats. How is Sheshach taken, and how is the praise of the whole earth surprised? How is Babylon become an astonishment among the nations? The sea is come up upon Babylon. She is covered with the multitude of the waves thereof. Her cities are a desolation, a dry land, and a wilderness, a land wherein no man dwelleth, neither doth any son of man pass thereby. And I will punish Bel in Babylon, and I will bring forth out of his mouth that which he hath swallowed up. And the nations shall not flow together any more unto him. Yea, the wall of Babylon shall fall. My people, go ye out of the midst of her, and deliver ye every man his soul from the fierce anger of Yahweh, and lest your heart faint, and ye shall fear for the rumor that shall be heard in the land. A rumor shall both come one year, and after that in another year shall come a rumor and violence in the land, ruler against ruler. Therefore, behold, the days come that I will do judgment upon the graven images of Babylon, and her whole land shall be confounded, and her slain shall fall in the midst of her. Then the heaven and the earth and all that is therein shall sing for Babylon, for the spoiler shall come upon her from the north, saith the Lord. As Babylon has caused the slain of Israel to fall, so at Babylon shall fall the slain of the earth. Ye that have escaped the sword, go away, stand not still. Remember Yahweh afar off, and let Jerusalem come into your mind.
Well, I mean, most of this is applicable to the fall of Mystery Babylon that we still await, or to the fall of Babylon in ancient times, but Babylon was not destroyed upon the coming of the Persians and the Medes. It wasn't.
And it became a dwelling place for dragons. You know, so what's that? Is that like mixed race people?
Well, yeah, I kind of think so, but that didn't happen until 600 AD.
Yeah, and also in 44, and the nations shall not flow together anymore unto him. Speaking of Babylon, so that sounds more like what's happening now as opposed to Babylon of ancient times.
Yeah, it does, but it was a pretty cosmopolitan city.
Yeah.
Well, I might be wrong, but also just the verse, taking it at face value of Old English, Jerusalem is not a static location or a static set city being come into your mind. Excuse me.
No, absolutely it's not. Not in prophecy. It's often stands for Yahweh's people or their seats of government or their centers of power, wherever they happen to be.
The city of God, the holy city.
Right, wherever it may be. That's what I mean. This is another good example of that, if not one of the best examples in scripture.
Look at this. The sea is come upon Babylon. She is covered with the multitude of the waves thereof. And the sea, you know, is that like mixed race people? Like, is that like the sea, the world's
people? Well, it's just the mass of the world's people, no matter what race they are, I think. And that describes all of the armies that are coming upon her.
Okay.
Well, yeah, because heaven and stars are always the governing force, indistinguished. Well, in some cases there are, excuse me, but
I would say the sun and the moon are.
Oh, the yeah, sun and the moon are what? Sorry.
Often allegories for governance. The emperor and the government or the king and the government.
Yeah, good call. I'm sorry. But you know, earth is the labor, the worker, the family man, I guess. That's not too far of a stretch, but I mean, heaven.
Commoner.
Well, right. But I mean, the stars and the moon, but even heaven. Oh, no. Excuse me. I'm sorry. No, I think heaven is pretty specific, but I keep thinking of the 12 stars around the whore in Revelation. But no, I don't disagree. Excuse me.
And 45.
And then a Revelation series.
One other thing.
That much, huh? Okay.
What, sir?
I'm looking at.
I didn't hear what you said, if that was to me.
I was asking you what y'all thought about the last presentation in the Revelation.
I was hunting. I'm sorry.
I haven't heard it yet.
Okay.
Hey, Bill, look at 48, where it says, shall come upon her from the north. And it kind of implies the time of the ancient Babylon. But I'm looking at Strong's definition of the north, that word, Safan, and it means gloomy or unknown.
The land of the north was always seen as gloomy. Because it was cold and sullen and
yeah, but perhaps it's being used here.
I don't have that definition here, but let me
at their position in the Levant. Well, excuse me, that's probably not the Levant, but then was it still as gloomy as it is here or where we were sent?
I'm just saying, I think it's being used figuratively, right?
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, good call.
Instead of the actual north.
Yeah, so what would the meaning be then, David?
Well, if it's modern day Babylon, it's what's happening, right? It's the gloomy unknown that's coming in. Probably.
Like so, that. Like.
Brown Driver Briggs, north is hidden or dark, and that's typical description of the north. And hidden, dark, or north, or northward.
Yeah, so I don't think it has. Well, sure, like you explained. That's what the north meant to them because it was an unknown area, but it's probably being used here in as a verb.
Adjective?
Yeah, I guess. An adjective, yeah. For.
Well, I guess south of the Caucasus, we're told by Strabo, I mean, it was uninhabited basically at that point. Well, I'm mixing up my times. I don't mean to make myself some.
Yeah, like I'm just saying north of, it's not, it's. Just saying that most of this entire chapter seems to be talking about modern day Babylon, pretty much.
So, David, would you say that modern Babylon, like ancient Babylon, will be destroyed by an unseen or unknown power?
Yeah, from Canada, to the north. No, I'm kidding.
Well, from Christians, maybe we're an unseen, unknown power. The Lord's power, Yahweh's power, is unseen and unknown in this world. And so Babylon might be destroyed by an unseen. They might not see the coming vengeance of God, maybe. Maybe I'm going a bit too far.
Yeah, you know, I really think that north here is literally north because the Persians and Medes and the Israelites with them were from the north. And the word north actually appears quite a bit in Jeremiah, actually from Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 13. And it usually refers to the children of Israel who are in captivity in the north.
So in this timeline, it's probably literal, right?
I believe so, in this timeline, right? Speaking if, of...
But it could if, have a double entendre, right?
If it's possible.
I don't know.
Could it be? And I'm sorry if I...
No, take over. It's okay.
I hate to stress it, but could it have also at that time have been unlooked for? And in the future tense, from that perspective, whenever it happens in the future, also be unlooked for. Maybe not from a cardinal direction, but also unlooked for.
You know, I don't see an allegorical use of this word north that would make sense to me in that way, but who knows?
Well,
talking about the future, it's difficult to predict anything, right?
Well, right. I don't even want to, I don't want to make it more than it is, but.
All right. Ye that have escaped the sword, go away. Stand not still. Remember Yahweh afar off and let Jerusalem come into your mind. We are confounded because we have heard reproach. Shame hath covered our faces, for strangers are come into the sanctuaries of Yahweh's house. Wherefore, behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will do judgment upon her graven images, and through all her land the wounded shall groan. Though Babylon should mount up to heaven, and though she should fortify the height of her strength, yet from me shall spoilers come unto her, saith Yahweh. A sound of a cry cometh from Babylon, and great destruction from the land of the Chaldeans, because Yahweh hath spoiled Babylon, and destroyed out of her the great voice, when her waves do roar like great waters, a noise of their voice is uttered. Because the spoiler is come upon her, even upon Babylon, and mighty men are taken, every one of their bows is broken, for Yahweh God of recompenses shall surely requite. And I will make drunk her princes and her wise men, her captains and her rulers and her mighty men, and they shall sleep a perpetual sleep and not wake, saith the king, whose name is Yahweh of hosts. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the broad walls of Babylon shall be utterly broken, and her high gates shall be burned with fire, and the people shall labor in vain, and the folk in the fire, and they shall be weary. The word which Jeremiah the prophet commanded Seraiah, the son of Neriah, the son of Maaseiah, when he went with Zedekiah, the king of Judah, into Babylon in the fourth year of his reign, and this Seraiah was a quiet prince. So Jeremiah wrote in a book all the evil that should come upon Babylon, even all these words that are written against Babylon. And Jeremiah said to Seraiah, when thou comest to Babylon and shalt see and shalt read all these words, then thou shalt say, O Yahweh, thou hast spoken against this place to cut it off, that none should remain in it, neither man nor beast, but it shall be desolate forever. And it shall be, when thou hast made an end of reading this book, that thou shalt bind a stone to it and cast it in the midst of the Euphrates. And thou shalt say, thus shall Babylon sink and shall not rise from the evil that I will bring upon her, and they shall be weary. Thus far are the words of Jeremiah.
Okay, well, it's pretty conclusive, but it's not fulfilled. So, or at least it wasn't fulfilled at that time.
How are we reading this book, Bill, if it was thrown in the Euphrates? Or is that after it's fulfilled, we throw it in the Euphrates?
No, it's after we made an end of reading it.
So how do we have this book then?
I know. It's like they must have copies. I don't know what to tell you.
Microphone
activated.
They did make copies. Sorry, Eric, but... like earlier of Jeremiah, it mentions that they made copies, like when the king burned his stuff, and he made another copy. So, I mean, it's not uncommon.
Is that allegorical somehow?
No, it's in an earlier chapter where he wrote down a bunch of stuff and he said, say it to the king, and the king heard it and he threw it in the fire. And then he had his scribe come back and he said, write it down again. So they were making copies of Jeremiah's stuff.
Well, think straight away that Jeremiah is out of order, right? So it makes sense.
Yeah, because, I mean, look at this. Zedekiah was 20 years old when he began to reign. Okay. That's just a recollection. But yeah, this looks like it should be the last chapter in Jeremiah, chapter 52. It does. But many of the chapters in Jeremiah are out of order.
Yeah, my bad. I wanted to ask, and this is probably proving why I thought this, because I'm a little off topic here, but Seraiah is not the Sirach of Apocrypha, right?
No.
Right, okay.
No, definitely not.
It's been
100 years apart.
Just wanted to make sure, yeah. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
If you look at verse 38, what's that talking about? It's talking about the high gate shall be burned with fire, and the people shall labor in vain, and the folk in the fire. Does that mean like they're laboring to try and preserve their city, and then they're like surrounded by the folk in the fire? Does that mean they're surrounded by fire or something? I think I remember a commentary where you explained this, but I've forgotten. Folk in the fire. I'm guessing that's what it means.
You're talking about chapter 51?
58. Verse 58.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And the folk in the fire.
Wasn't that possibly to those that were thrown into?
I think it just refers to the people in a sweat of battle.
I'm looking at the NSAB and it says, so the peoples will toil for nothing and the nations become exhausted only for fire. So everything that Babylon did is just going to be burned. Is what NASB seems to say. But that's all right.
It does seem to be diminishing negative again.
And then you look at verse 51, and it says, "For strangers are come into the sanctuaries of Yahweh's house."
Well, then the next one is idolatry, right? So,
so it's like the time of Christ or Malachi. I don't know if it's prophesying that far ahead. You know, like strangers are in the Lord's house because you got the Edomites in there.
Well, it's all very negative towards the next half dozen verses, and then I don't.
What do you reckon, Bill?
I don't know who Sarada was, but he was a quiet prince. Oh wait,
I think it's just a depiction of the hardship of battle when you're at the city walls and you're trying to defend the city.
No, I mean verse 51, "For strangers have come into the sanctuaries of Yahweh's house and shame have covered our faces." Is that like a prophecy of the future where you've got Edomite priests?
Okay, "ye that have escaped the sword" is speaking about the people of Judah in captivity in Babylon when it falls, right?
Oh, okay, yeah, okay, so that's when Babylonians are like,
and they are still in shame because they were taken into captivity and their temple was destroyed.
Yeah, I was way off. I was
because they were so enveloped in idolatry and idolatry.
You got to check the context.
Well, the context of this is the Judean captives, the people of Judah that are captive in Babylon when it falls.
Yeah.
So because the Babylonians were the cause of the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, Yahweh says, "Wherefore, behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will do judgment upon her," meaning Babylon's graven images. So he's going to destroy their temples, right?
Yeah, got it.
And all her mighty men and every one of their bows.
You know that verse?
It's just a portrait of something that, so far as we know, did not happen in antiquity. Because Babylon wasn't actually destroyed by the Persians. It was taken by them, but it wasn't destroyed.
And why would they record it?
Why? Because the Greeks, who are basically a disinterested third party, recorded otherwise, and Babylon wasn't destroyed.
Well, I'm sorry. I was saying it as, why would the defeated record it as a loss to hide their shame? But I was,
yeah, right. Well, the Babylonians couldn't record it. The government fell into the hands of the Persians, but according to Herodotus, who was writing only 130 years after this time, he was writing about 80 years after Cyrus took Babylon, maybe 90 tops. After Cyrus took Babylon, he was recording that history, and Babylon wasn't destroyed, and Herodotus actually seems to have visited Babylon and describe the city and its walls.
Yeah, in great detail, actually.
Yeah, and its hanging gardens and other wonders.
So they were not destroyed.
Isn't this apparent in your Hosea commentary, or is that too late?
Well, Hosea is too early.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I'm over here.
Microphone muted.
Yeah, I mean, I never did write a commentary on the fall of Babylon or anything like that. I mean, I would if I was doing a Jeremiah commentary.
Well, it's all very...
Or a lot of it, commentary.
Yeah, a lot of it is incorporated. I just can't keep it straight. I apologize.
Fine.
So, well, hey, Shirley. So would you say some of that's like a far fulfillment rather than the immediate because it wasn't destroyed in the way?
I would have to. I would have to say that because it didn't happen then.
Microphone activated.
So like Mystery Babylon.
Well, doesn't...
And maybe that's the first indication that we should compare this to the Revelation, right?
Well, where it says that he's going to bind it to a stone and cast it into a river. Does that not kind of, I won't say preclude, but kind of reinforce the Revelation as far as where it says that we're given, well, that's John, but come to reveal things not known since the beginning, basically, or the foundation of the society or the world, however you want to interpret that.
I would cross-reference it to Revelation 18:21, and a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and cast it into the sea, saying, thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down,
and yeah,
found no more at all.
Good call. I'm sorry I talked over you.
That's what I would cross-reference that to, if I was writing a Jeremiah commentary. And use that to assert an indication that this hasn't been fulfilled yet.
I don't think any of this has, my personal opinion. I mean, I think this whole thing is talking about, the whole chapter is.
It could very well be using imagery from that present time to describe something, the far vision that would happen far in the future.
You know that verse you mentioned, Eric, the quiet prince. If you go to other translations, it says it has quartermaster and chamberlain instead of quiet prince.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sariah was the chief chamberlain or quartermaster.
But here in Jeremiah, he shall see and he shall read these words. Or I shouldn't say but I was just looking at verse 61. To cut it off, that none shall remain, neither man nor beast, but that it shall be desolate forever.
Well, according to Jeremiah 52:24, Sariah is the name of the chief priest.
You want to read 52?
Quartermaster. I don't know how the New North American Standard Version gets quartermaster out of these words for quiet prince.
Maybe an unoppressive, I don't know the term.
The Septuagint Greek has Sarius was the ruler over the gifts. It's kind of fucking weird, man. So that's
like
kind of strange.
Like a nobleman over a serf? I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, the words in the Hebrew, it's definitely, without a doubt, Sariah was a ruler over a resting place, or maybe a restful ruler, or but no, it's a noun, it's not an adjective. So he was a ruler of a resting place. And they translated that as quiet prince for some strange reason. I'd want to do a word study on that phrase before I ever translated it.
Well, what is clear in 52 is the idolatry, obviously. I don't mean to take us back a step, but...
Well, we can go to get through 52, but I'm going to take a 2-minute break and go to the boys' room. I'll be right back.
All right. Yeah, so a lot of that chapter does seem to refer to Mystery Babylon rather than Ancient Babylon.
Well, absolutely. I think it's still, in ways, I don't really want to call it a dual prophecy, but I mean, it seems very obvious that some things are more than just the timeline. But I might just be very ignorant. I'll admit that. I can admit that.
Yeah, well, heap of Bible commentaries link it to the Revelation too. And then you've got the sea of people, the flow of people going into Babylon. And like modern Babylon, Mystery Babylon has all these people flowing into it to feed on God's holy mountain.
Well, exactly.
And the idolatry, you know, all the nation drunk on the idolatry of Babylon.
Well, that's what I was saying in the one before, as far as like the gilded cup, the golden cup kind of a thing. You know, it's just the false shining on the hill kind of a thing.
You got the whore with the cup full of those abominations. Maybe it's, you know, that's a gilded cup.
Right, that's the illusion. Not the illusion, but the bringing people towards it kind of a thing.
There's like three Sarayas. There's like three Sarayas in Jeremiah in chapter 36. There's a Sariah, the son of Azrael. In chapter 40, there's Sariah, the son of Tanhumeth. And in chapter 51, there's Sariah, the son of Neriah.
That's a good one.
Hmm.
I like that one.
And this Sariah in chapter 52, who's evidently also the Sariah of Jeremiah 51, is the chief priest.
That's a cool name too. Yah has prevailed. That's a cool name, Sariah.
Yeah, it is a cool name. I agree. Yahweh is ruler, or Yahweh has prevailed, or I always had to switch to the view where I could see the Hebrew and look at the definitions there. Brown Driver Briggs has Yahweh persists.
I like all the names with Yahweh in the name. Like Uriah is an awesome one, light of Yahweh. Sariah, Yahweh prevails. That's a good one. All right, I'll read chapter 52 then. Zedekiah was 1 and 20. So we've gone back in time. Okay. Zedekiah was 1 and 20 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libnah. And he did that which was evil in the sight, in the eyes of Yahweh, according to all that Jehoiakim had done. For though the anger of Yahweh, it came to pass, for through the anger of Yahweh it came to pass in Jerusalem and Judah till he had cast them out from his presence, that Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. And it came to pass in the ninth year of his reign, in the tenth month, in the tenth day of the month, that Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, came, he and all his army, against Jerusalem, and pitched against it, and built forts against it round about. So the city was besieged unto the 11th year of King Zedekiah. And in the fourth month, in the ninth day of the month, the famine was sore in the city, so that there was no bread for the people of the land. Then the city was broken up, and all the men of the war fled, and went forth out of the city by night by the way of the gate between the two walls, which was by the king's garden. Now the Chaldeans were by the city round about, and they went by the way of the plain. But the army of the Chaldeans pursued the king and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho, and all his army was scattered from him. Then they took the king and carried him up unto the king of Babylon to Riblah in the land of Hamath, where he gave judgment upon him. And the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. He slew also all the princes of Judah in Riblah. Then put out the eyes of Zedekiah, the king of Babylon, bound him in chains, and carried him to Babylon, and put him in prison till the day of his death. Now in the fifth month, in the tenth day of the month, which was the 19th year of Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, came Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, which served the king of Babylon, into Jerusalem, and burned the house of Yahweh, and the king's house, and the houses of Jerusalem, and all the houses of the great men burned he with fire. And all the army of the Chaldeans that were with the captain of the guard broke down all the walls of Jerusalem round about. Then Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away captive certain of the poor of the people and the residue of the people that remained in the city, and those that fell away, that fell to the king of Babylon, and the rest of the multitude. But Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left certain of the poor of the land for vine dressers and for husbandmen, and the pillars of brass that were in the house of Yahweh, and the bases and the brazen sea that was in the house of Yahweh, the Chaldeans brake, and carried all the brass of them to Babylon. And so that's halfway through that chapter.
I'm sorry. I'm always talking while I'm muted. I'm going to show you all an article that I just saw. I think my wife brought it to my attention like about a week ago. She showed me this, or maybe not even a week ago. And it's actually an article which claims, thank you, beautiful. It's an article which claims that there was a 300-foot subterranean chamber in Jerusalem is the site where the biblical King Zedekiah was blinded. And that's a claim at newsbreak.com. Yet, the Bible clearly says that his eyes were put out in Babylon, right? We just read it. And I don't know, man. It's like anything to come up with a sensational headline, they just lie blatantly. How do they know Zedekiah was blinded in this subterranean chamber when the Bible says that his eyes were taken out in this plain outside the city, and then he was carried to Babylon? Why would they bring him back to Jerusalem and bring him down into the chamber to put his eyes out? Why would they even do that?
Well, even if they did, how can they substantiate that?
Yeah, here, this says that he was brought to Babylon. The king carried him. They took the king and carried him up to the king of Babylon to Riblah in the land of Hamath, where he gave judgment upon him. So this happened in Riblah. And the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. He also slew all the princes of Judah in Riblah. And then he put out the eyes of Zedekiah in Riblah. So this happened in Riblah, where this article at newsbreak.com, which was only published September 26th, claims that Zedekiah's eyes were put out in a subterranean chamber under Jerusalem in a cave. That they don't care about the Bible. They'll just, any lie for any sensationalism, sensational headline they could grab.
It's probably on purpose, just for, as like you said, it's just for sensationalism. It's something different from what is recorded, and it's another talking piece for the Jews to conduct war against us in some way.
It's like they're always experts above the Bible, and they have no, you know, real right to claim that all the time. Like how they claim that they can just override the apostles and they can override the authors of the gospels. Oh, they didn't really witness that. This is what they witnessed. And oh, this part of John, we're just going to throw that out because we don't agree with it. It's, they're always doing that because they think they're the experts. That's the way I think of it. It's like they
look at this article. It says right in the article, in spite of the headline, right? The headline says a 300-foot subterranean chamber in Jerusalem is the site where the biblical king Zedekiah was blinded. That's the headline. That's what it announces. And then about halfway down, it says historians don't have evidence to prove that the rock quarry was where Zedekiah was imprisoned. Whoever said he was imprisoned? But the quarry itself is a 300-foot-long subterranean chamber that seems to be man-made and hollowed out. The whole area covers 5 acres. So they make this claim in a headline, and then they admit that there's really no evidence to support it. They just make up whatever the fuck they want. They don't care. They're worse than Roman Catholics.
Typical. They treat it like a fucking comic book.
Yeah. Yeah, they do.
They just want to romanticize their own fantasy version.
I just hate how they claim to be the experts on everything.
Well, it's stolen identity.
Well, this article was written by a Pajit or a curry nigger who claims to have a PhD in chemistry from the University of Cincinnati.
So he put together a Lego set for $60.
Yeah, right. A Lego set of lies.
put together a Lego set of the trade towers that were brought down by sand monkeys.
Yeah, well, if Babylon wants a low IQ beast to serve them, I mean, that's what they're going to do. There's no question that these Indians have a low IQ. They're dumb. They've never achieved anything, yet they're, you know, they're elevated in the society and worship. So that's one reason probably why Babylon will fall. The confusion of Babylon, the idolatry and the mixing and all this.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Without question.
There's no question that the Indian isn't the most qualified for the position it has, so.
That's why I never get anywhere if I have a customer service call.
We're going a bit off topic.
I'll leave it there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There's another article that's not attributed from a website called Atlas Obscura, which repeats the same claims. And they, it seems to be just some like Jew myth or something that they're repeating.
Yeah.
No grounding in actual scripture or history whatsoever. They'll just repeat it.
Zedekiah's cave.
How did they know?
Well, yeah, this last chapter of Jeremiah just seems to be a sort of summary chapter of Zedekiah's rule. That's why it went back in time at the beginning.
It's like a recapitulation chapter.
Yeah. But certain people claim there is no recapitulation in Scripture.
All right, well, I'll finish reading it then.
That's fine.
All right. The cauldrons also, and the shovels, and the snuffers, and the bowls, and the spoons, and the vessels of brass wherewith they ministered took they away. And the basins, and the firepans, and the bowls, and the cauldrons, and the candlesticks, and the spoons, and the cups, that which was of gold in gold, and that which was of silver in silver, took the captain of the guard away. The two pillars, one sea, and 12 brazen bulls that were under the bases which King Solomon had made in the house of Yahweh, the brass of all these vessels was without weight. And concerning the pillars, the height of one pillar was 18 cubits, and a fillet of 12 cubits did compass it, and the thickness thereof was 4 fingers, it was hollow. And a chapiter of brass was upon it, and the height of one chapiter was 5 cubits, with network and pomegranates upon the chapiters round about, all of brass. The second pillar also, and the pomegranates were like unto these. And there were 96 pomegranates on a side, and all the pomegranates upon the network were 100 round about. And the captain of the guard took Seraiah, the chief priest, and Zephaniah, the second priest, and the 3 keepers of the door. He took also out of the city an eunuch, which had the charge of the men of war, and 7 men of them that were near the king's person, which were found in the city, and the principal scribe of the host, who mustered the people of the land, and 80 men of the people of the land that were found in the midst of the city. So Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, took them and brought them to the king of Babylon in Riblah. And the king of Babylon smote them, and put them to death in Riblah in the land of Hamath. Thus Judah was carried away captive of his own land. This the people whom Nebuchadrezzar carried away captive in the 7th year, 3,000 Judeans and 23. In the 18th year of Nebuchadrezzar, he carried away captive from Jerusalem 832 persons. In the 20th year of Nebuchadrezzar, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away captive of the Judeans 745 persons. All the persons were 4,600. And it came to pass in the 37th year of the captivity of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, in the 12th month, in the 25th day of the month, that evil Merodach, king of Babylon, in the 1st year of his reign, lifted up the head of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, and brought him forth out of prison, and spake kindly unto him, and set his throne above the throne of the kings that were with him in Babylon, and changed his prison garments, and he did continually eat bread before him the days of his life. And for his diet, there was a continual diet him of the king of Babylon, every day apportioned until the day of his death, or the days of his life.
I don't remember where I spoke about it. It could have been Amos, my Amos commentary. I'm going to try to look real quick, though. But there is a Babylonian inscription that was discovered. Here it is, Amos part 5.
Thank you for reading, Joe.
Yeah, no worries.
The Taylor Prison. Okay. Various Babylonian inscriptions attested to the presence of the household of Jehoiachin, king of Judah, in captivity in Babylon. So I might have to go back to like part 4 or part 3. I'm saying that in my summary at the beginning. Here we go. From administrative documents found in Babylon, this is Amos part 4. some information concerning the fate of Jehoiachin, king of Judah, can be gathered. And this is from ancient Near Eastern texts relating to the Old Testament, 308, from a section containing historical documents from the reign of Nebuchadnezzar II, who was the king of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar I was actually a king long, long before Nebuchadnezzar II. And it seems to be a list of the men that were in captivity in Babylon that were being given provisions. And in one place it says the sons of the king of Judah. And in another place it says the sons of the king of Judah. And in another place it says Yakutinu, the son of the king of Yakuta, meaning Judah. And that could be some kind of screwy Assyrian spelling of Jehoiachin, of what we have as Jehoiachin.
I kept saying Jehoiachin. I should have said Jehoiachin.
Yeah, I mean, either way it works.
Yeah, it's close enough.
I think there's two different kings, though. I think there's a Jehoiachin, isn't there?
There's a Jehoiachin and a Jehoiachin, right.
Oops, father and son.
So these are taken as a sort of, these are accepted by archaeologists as a sort of proof of the historicity of this chapter. Which it certainly is, in my opinion.
Well, the Romans had the records and they wrote the Bible, you know, with these records for some reason. They made up the whole Bible.
Yeah.
At the time of the Catholic Church.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand joking. That argument. That guy's a clown.
Some idiots. Yeah, he is. A lot of idiots say stupid stuff.
Yeah, he's made a living doing that.
Yeah.
He's made a career for himself doing that shit.
Oh, yeah. If you wanted to get rich quick, you'd just be a syncretist.
Pretend to be an expert on something.
Yeah, read enough to know that you can say that you know without knowing, I guess.
What do you think of this evil Merodach, Bill? What do you think of that guy?
Evil Merodach, king of Babylon?
Yep. He can't, I don't know, maybe he was a nice guy, but he doesn't sound, just going by his name, you know, I don't know if I could think of him as any, if I could be friends with him.
I don't know the etymology, but he just seems to be kind of a placeholder.
It just means man of Merodach, and I don't know what language that would be, Aramaic?
Well, kind of a placeholder, time holder.
And they claim it means soldier of Merodach. Evil Merodach, the thing with Babylonian history and the Book of Nezar too is that except for Nabonidus, none of the successors of the Book of Nezar too lasted very long, right? They're saying that Amel Marduk, also known as Awil Marduk, and that A-W-I-L Marduk, that W could be a V, right? That Vav and that War are basically the same letter. And that could be evil Merodach, and that's how it's interpreted there. He was the successor of Nebuchadnezzar II. He was a son, and he only lasted 2 years. But I really don't know much about him. He was killed, and the throne was usurped. And he was only the king for 2 years. I think Babylon probably had four or five kings after Nebuchadnezzar II. Nebuchadnezzar II ruled for like 60 freaking years, man. And Babylon only lasted for about 20 or 30 years after he died. I mean, I don't remember the exact timeline. It might even have been not that long. Yeah, it was only 21 years, I think, from the time of the death of Nebuchadnezzar II, who actually, okay, he ruled for about 46 years. 44 years, something like that, from like 606 to 562. And then his son takes over as king in 562, and he only rules for 2 years. And 21 years later, Babylon's being conquered by the Persians. Well, so the whole Babylonian Empire didn't last for but, say, 539 BC from 606 BC. That's 67 years. And Nebuchadnezzar II was the king for two-thirds of that time. And the last third of it, there were a bunch of kings that were only short-lived until Nabonidus. I think Nabonidus actually ruled about 12 years, which was like a record for that time. No, even longer, 17 years, from 556 to 539 BC, Nabonidus. And it was taken by Cyrus the Great in 539. So that's longer than I thought. So you had Nebuchadnezzar II, then you had Amel-Marduk, who only ruled for 2 years. And he was usurped by Nergal-Sharr, who only ruled for 4 years. And he was succeeded by Labashi-Marduk, who only ruled for a couple of months, and he was succeeded by Nabonidus, who ruled for 17 years, right? I mean, so those, I don't know much about those three in the middle in between the Nebuchadnezzar and the Nabonidus, but they didn't last very long.
Well, maybe that's why, because Merodach was such a shitbag, or excuse me, such a poopy pants, that he's not that worth mentioning, and he was just a continuation of the evil that was going on at the time. That's just...
Well, I mean, it was kind of kind to Jehoiachin. He was kind to him, right? So, I mean, the guy probably wasn't all bad. They were all bad, right? They were all pagans. They were all bad. But, I mean, he probably wasn't all bad. He was kind to Jehoiachin. He extended him kindness and took him out of prison and fed him at his table.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Maybe that is symbolic of why he's called what he is. That's a stretch.
Well, Jehoiachin had been in prison for almost 40 years by this time.
Yeah, my bad. I'm sorry. I was thinking of something else. I wasn't considering the next few verses.
Microphone
yeah,
activated.
Like the word evil here, it's just son of.
So yeah, son but of. It's not really evil in the sense of the English term evil.
That's what right. I'm saying. Yeah, it's not that's at all.
That's why I was confusing myself. I'm sorry.
Some interpretations say it means soldier of Merodach, or Marduk is actually the way to. But Marduk is one of the gods of the Babylonian pantheon and also of the Persian pantheon.
It's funny because the NASB has a hyphen between evil and Merodach. Like they're trying to confuse people into thinking this is an evil Merodach.
Yeah, like there's no reason for them to have not transliterated this properly. They transliterated instead of translating it. They should have put man of Merodach or son of.
Yeah.
Yeah, they I should agree, have interpreted yeah. it instead of transliterating it.
Well, even the KJV is misleading.
Yeah, I can imagine Judeo-Christians being misled by stuff like that and building a whole if it was an important part of the Bible, they would. They'd build like a whole thing on it.
It seems that Anel Marduk is the more popular spelling rather than Avol or Evil Marduk. Reading the Wikipedia page. I'd have to check my books of inscriptions. Well, Evil Merodach is probably really a slander upon the guy, but I don't know if the King James translators meant it that way.
Well, isn't it H192? Or that's the whole thing. No, you already went over that. I'm sorry.
It's like, how many times does Lucifer appear in the Old Testament? Like once or twice, and they've got this whole narrative about it? You know, so you have to wonder why they don't have a whole narrative around Evil Merodach as some sort of evil character.
Oh, of course. Same thing as Lucifer, the slander basically against the Babylonian king, the light bringer of the world. Ha ha ha. Oh. And all of a sudden, oh, we have Lucifer, the mighty, tidy, whitey, uber goober, pooper, super duper. Horned devil,
god of the Freemasons, and it's all based on some crazy
yeah, that's the best way to say it.
Yeah, right, their whole narrative about Lucifer is all bullshit, 100% bullshit.
But it's, I mean, look at all the money they make out of it. I mean, I'd say that as a jest, but
it's, that's sad, all it really is.
Oh, of course. I mean, if you didn't laugh, you'd cry. That's all it takes. It's one word. They'll run with it. And sadly, we'll run with it. You know, or even our own people.
Yeah, that's what it's like, Eric. It's like they can barely understand or grasp most of the Bible, but they can pick out certain little words every now and again and build stories about them, because that's as far as they can go.
Oh, of course. Well, they don't have the understanding. They won't, and they can't. They were not made, right? I can't even say they were made in a certain way because they weren't made. They're a byproduct, and that's all they can do. Non-creations only breed non-creations, physically, mentally, emotionally, I won't say spiritually. But that's
kind
all
off
they
can
the
do. Kind.
Yeah, exactly. Or even off-kind.